So in our Torah portion tonight, we're Bashalak, when he sent. And when you look at the ones he sent Moses. He sent Deborah and Barak. Talked about Mordecai and Esther and Purim. Yeshua. And he sends each and every one of us. He has planned out precisely the plan that is for each and every one of us for his glory. Now there's two words I want to focus on. That's either going to bring him glory, or it's going to bring us utter destruction. And the utter destruction part would be, of all of this, I would label tonight, self-satisfaction or loyalty to obey God and love his people. Because you can see clearly in all these stories, starting clearly with Purim, and all through all these people's lives, they had loyalty to obey God and love his people. But then the ones you saw that were cursed, the ones that died, disobeyed God, and they did it for their own self-satisfaction. We're going to talk about Shaul, Saul. Talked about him. He didn't obey God. Things happened towards the end. Things he didn't carry out. He kept the things for himself. It was for self-satisfaction. Keeping those things caused a lot of trouble, for not only himself, but for the Jews back down the line again. Caused more trouble. But in Purim, we talked about Esther when she went from being a little girl without a father and a mother, being raised by her cousin Mordecai. God put her, and I want to emphasize, put her in royalty for a time such as this. God put her in a position. In a position the way she was going to give into the luxury and have self-satisfaction, right? Or she was going to stop for a moment and see that those things wasn't the most important thing. The most important thing was God, obeying God, and loving her people. To put herself on the line. Just like we talked about in Barak and Deborah. And we'll talk about some of those things. About self-satisfaction or loyalty to obey God and love his people. But think about that. Everything we read in here is about a test. He tested them with the food, right? He gave them a precise measurement. He said, I'm going to give you this much. And that's what he told Moses. I'm going to give them this much. And those who had little, who had more, whatever they did with it, it was a mess, or they had more than enough, right? So he has a precise measurement, and what he says to obey his commandments, it works. He's got the plan. He knows how to do it 100%, right? Our plans are not 100%, because we talked about, Brother Josh talked about, our heart is deceitful above all else in Jeremiah, right? Our heart is deceitful. It's evil. Our thoughts and our minds at best. We talked about Saul. He said, okay, you don't want me to lead you? You want a person to lead you? So he said, I'll give you a leader. I'll give you the best out of them all. I'll give you the most handsome, the strongest. I'll give you Shaul. I'll give you Saul. You want a leader? I'll give you a leader. So he gave him the best. And the best, at the best, failed. Didn't he? He failed. He went for the stuff. He didn't obey the commandment of God. So Agag, descendants all the way to Haman. More people's in trouble. The Jews are going to die because of it, right? And here's God again. He raises up somebody else to not have self-satisfaction, but to have loyalty to obey him and love his people. And that's what it's all about. Every one of us is going to be put in a plan. Plans God for God. And you're going to be put maybe in that place like Esther was, in a place of royalty. What are you going to do when you get there? Are you going to fall in love with the surroundings? All the stuff that's temporary? Think about it. Everybody gets attracted to all that stuff that self-pleases you. Ooh, it's nice. It's craving. That the enemy knows what you crave the most and what you love the most. And if it's not God, guess what? It's going to crumble in your hands and it's going to die with you. Because, hey, it's appointed to man wants to die, right? And it's up to God to raise whoever it is back from the dead, right? So it's going to be either for self-satisfaction or to obey God and be loyal to him and love his people. So she was given the choice to stay silent and enjoy the luxury or count it all as nothing and put her life on the line for her people. And even Mordecai, we talked about, tells her, regardless of her choice, you're as good as dead also, being a Jew. So she was put in royalty. Her plan was to be put in royalty for a time such as this. So think about that in your life. When you go home, Purim's over, and go on throughout the year with other things that God has in store for us to pay attention to and listen to keep us up and going. Think about Esther. She was put in royalty for a time such as this. Think about the positions that you get put in and the tests that come about. You're going to be given that choice to take and have self-satisfaction, whatever it is God gives you. Might be a great business. Brother AJ's got a big responsibility. He's got a big business, doesn't he? It's pretty big. Big responsibility. You know, it's easy for him in his place to have self-satisfaction or to do it for the glory of God and for each and every young guy that works for him. I've seen him so many times put forth so much effort and love these boys and every place that they're in. It's not an easy task to do something like that. I've dealt with youth before. I've dealt with the humble ones. I've dealt with the prideful ones. Brother Herman, Sister Marlena, they deal with that kind of stuff. It's not easy. You really got to put your radar on and listen to the Spirit of the Lord to be careful what you say, what not to say, what to do, and how to do it. Because you can blow the whole thing with your own words. You got to be careful to listen to the Spirit. I was on the boat today, and we come to a fog zone in the river. So I got the radar on, and I do as what I'm used to doing. Keep my eyes on the radar. And the whole time I got my eyes on that radar, I'm thinking about the Spirit of the Lord. You really have to listen to the Spirit of the Lord. That's what all these people did. Who was Moses listening to? He was listening to the Spirit of the Lord. It didn't come later on. It was always there. He listened to the Spirit of the Lord. What did the prophetess Deborah listen to? When she said, hey, Barak, you're not going to kill her, but a woman's going to kill him. A woman's going to kill him. And what happened towards the end? Barak went looking for him. Where was he? He was dead. Jael killed him with a peg, right? It was foretold before it even happened. Who whispered that in the prophet's ear? God did. She had her radar tuned in. She listened to the Spirit of the Lord and she told them what they needed to do. Hey, and she knew the day and the time. She said, hey, let's go right now. Today, the Lord's going to give him into your hand. Today. You think God doesn't know what he's doing? So when he told Saul, hey, kill them all. Women, children, donkeys, the whole bloodline. Don't let nothing of Agag go. And when he got there, what did he do? Well, you know, we can keep all the good stuff. And we'll just get rid of the bad stuff. And I want to take the king here because that's what they did. They like to take the king and tear off a piece of the king's robe and put it on and add in being pride. You know, look, I got another one and drag him around town. Look at what I got. I got King Agag. But God said, boy, you don't even know what you're carrying around. You're carrying around a seed of a bloodline that when you let him go, his children go, it's going to be bad news for your people and you don't even see it. And bad news for himself. He wrote his death sentence when he disobeyed God. You know that? He wrote his death sentence. He committed suicide in the end. So you got to be careful to listen and do everything God tells you to do. Everything. Every precise instruction. You know, the angel of light, you know, Satan is the angel of light half the time. And he loves to deceive with something that you crave and love the most. And he knows it's self-satisfaction. So if it's not God and his people, whatever it is you love, and he knows what you love the most, he's going to entertain you with it. You know, people make it too easy for Hasatan. They make it too easy for the devil. It's too easy for him. They just let him take control and be put in prison over something that you love and crave that's only self-satisfying, and it's for a brief moment, and it crumbles. It goes away. It doesn't last. But God and his people, they last forever, right? His kingdom's going to last forever, for eternity. So God's test for Esther should make us think, am I to choose the luxury and self-satisfaction or obey God no matter what position I'm in? It really proves our love for the Father and his people or love for ourselves and selfishness and greed for what we want. It's what we want, right? It's always what we want. God is 100% right all the time, and He proves the outcome of our choices throughout history in His Word time and time again. So the Bible is the proof through other people's lives of He knows exactly what we're going to do. And if we don't make the right choices, that's the line we're going to follow, and that's the ending that we're going to have, just like them. To have victory over our enemies in any circumstance, we must obey God. So let's reflect back on the Amalekites in the Torah portion in Exodus 17 tonight. Let's look at Exodus 17, 14 through 16. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this as a memorial in a book and recite in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out of the memory of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called the name of it, "The Lord is my banner," saying, "A hand upon the throne of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." And then if you turn to Numbers chapter 24, verse 7, you can turn there or you can just listen to me read it. "He shall pour the water out of his buckets, and his seed," see that word seed, "shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted." 1 Samuel 15, 8 through 9. "And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive," Saul did, "and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword, but Saul and the people spared Agag." If you read the story, God said to spare none. Kill them all. You have no idea if you let any of them loose what's going to happen. Kill them all for a reason, right? That's what God said. God has specifically ordered the destruction of the Amalekites through the prophet Samuel by King Saul. Saul, however, did not carry out the orders he received and made excuse that he had brought some of the best cattle to use in sacrifices. Of course, when sacrifices were made to God, the people got to enjoy eating the meat that was cooked. King Agag was also spared by Saul until Samuel had Agag executed. God intended that the destruction of the Amalekites be his judgment on them, but Saul was looking to see how his men could benefit from the plunder. See? Self-satisfaction gets you in trouble, doesn't it? Samuel makes it clear that God is more interested in our obedience than our self-satisfaction. So that's God's proof of that was when the people wanted was a tangible king. So God picked the best out of all the people, Shaul, Saul, and he failed. And so little sins lead to big consequences. Wouldn't you say that? Little sins lead to big consequences. Everything God says is important. Everything. You know, when we come here on Sunday mornings, Saturday afternoons, every word that God says is very important. You take none of it lightly. I was going over all the Purim messages, and this stuck out to me the most. I went back to a message. My wife reminded me of it, actually, while I was going through the Purim messages. I was listening to all last year's Purim messages. And when she said that we need to go back and remember the words that the Lord spoke to us. Sometimes we forget things, right? We got to go back and look over it again. We have things to remind us of our chores the next day during the week, right? Plans, calendars. We'll write things down to remember. I think it's really more important than when the Lord tells us something that's going to happen in our future that we need to carry with us and obey and do. We need to go back and remember those things. And so there was a day, you can go back and look it up yourself if you want, but it was a message that was called First Day, Second Day, and the Third Day You Accomplish Your Goal. And that was a morning the Lord said it was so crucial that we listen. And there was many people not there that morning. He said it's critical. He said it was critical to listen that morning to what the Lord had to say. And it was critical for many that wasn't here that morning. And he said, whether they get a second chance to hear this again or not, I don't know. It's up to the Lord. But it was a critical day and a critical message for all of us. It was critical for me to hear that, because it was a message for me that I needed things in my life straightened up. And it was a word that Jesus spoke. He says, on the first day, the second day, and on the third day, you'll accomplish your goal. And so I had 3 days to accomplish that goal, to heed the warning and to make the adjustments necessary in my life. So I was given a warning from the Lord, sat down and was told some things. He said, you need to quit labeling yourself a victim, Chad. You need to quit saying certain things about yourself and looking at other people's fault that you're in the spot that you're in, or the way you feel about certain things. And there's many things that he said. I don't need to go over those details. But I took that serious. And every day I recited that over and over my life again. And every time those things would try and pop up, I said, no, that's not right at all. That's not true. And so I worked on those things in my life. And it was very critical that I fix and adjust those things. So I went back and I listened to that message again. And it made me tear up and weep. And I was like, yes, Lord, I'm going to keep listening to those things. Don't poor mouth yourself. That was one of the other things I was told. Don't poor mouth yourself. Don't tell other things, your pity patty story of things that may look like not going right in your life. Because every time you do that to yourself, you make God look like he's little or less. So I had to tell myself, hey, Chad, every time you feel like you're not getting it, you're not making it because of somebody else or something else, you're making it look like God's not going to help you accomplish anything at all. It made God look bad. And I didn't realize that. So every time those thoughts, the enemy tried to throw those at me, I said, nope, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to do that ever again. And I made those adjustments throughout the year. And let me tell you something. I've had victory in my life. I'm not a victim. I don't poor mouth myself anymore. I speak highly about what God says about me. And when things ain't going well, I give him praise and glory and honor. I thank him for it all and through it all. And it works. And so, everything God says is very important. So remember that. So if you're in a service and the preacher or the teacher says, hey, you need to straighten up some things. You got some things going on that you need to make some adjustments. It's for your own good, because God loves you and he's got a plan for you and a plan for a lot of other people that's to follow. But if we keep disobeying those things, we're going to fall into that spot of self-satisfaction. And self-satisfaction is bad. He also said, we're in the fourth quarter right now. We're in the final stretch. He said about 85% of all the prophecies that's been foretold in the Bible has come through already. There's 15% left. God's right 100% of the time. We don't have no time to play. So if there's some adjustments that we need to make in our life, we need to make it now. We don't have time to play anymore. We got to make these adjustments. So Saul's disobedience wrote his own death sentence through his disobedience. So everyone who went after the luxury and the self-satisfaction died and were cursed. In the Torah portion, Judges chapter 4, 4 through 5 and 31, the people are in bondage again. If you go through the book of Judges and you go way, way back, every time God's got to send somebody to their rescue, it's because of their disobedience and their self-satisfaction and what they wanted. Remember when we heard in the Torah portion tonight? They grumbled and complained. Where's the water? They grumbled and complained. Where's the food? They grumbled and complained. We wish we were back in Egypt. Are you kidding me? Do you really want to go back to Egypt? Do you really want to be back in bondage and hammering and pushing up on all the mortar and the brick and all the things that they went through bondage with, right? They went through bondage for a long time. Do you really want to go back to that because of something you want to be self-pleased with right now? I need to be pleased. I need my food. I need my water. Things ain't going my way. I don't like this. It seems like a long time. Remember that day they said, man, it seems like a long time Moses is up there. Let's just go back and build us a God of our own. We need something that we could see, something that we could touch. After everything God did for them, over and over and over again, what happens? Yeah, they go back to self-satisfaction. I want to please me. I don't feel like it's going to happen. So they go back to relying on their heart, relying on their mind, and their thoughts. Remember, God's ways are higher than our ways. God's thoughts are higher than ours. Remember, He's perfect. We're the ones that got tainted with the knowledge of good and evil, right? We got tainted. Our ways are a mess. We can't keep trying to plan it our way. Our plans come to a bad spot. But His plans is the best. So when you get put in that spot of royalty, what are you going to do with it? Remember, Yeshua talked about the talents. He gave one a talent, two talents, all the way up to a couple of talents. And there was this other guy that had a talent. All of them took their talents, and they did something great with it. They glorified God with it. But the other one, they buried it. Put it on the side. That would be a person that would say, hey, I'm a Christian. I'm a God-fearing person in church with a handshake and a smile. But when you go in public, they act nothing like a Christian. They act nothing like a God-fearing person. They don't do the things that God would do. They don't say the things God would say. But they get back in church again, shake your hand. How you doing, brother? How you doing, sister? Oh, God is good. When you get back in public, still doing their own thing, don't obey any rules that God sets, do their own self-pleasing, self-satisfaction. And in the end, He takes that talent away from that person and says, you wicked man, you didn't do anything I gave you, I told you to do. I'm going to give it to the one that gained 3 or 4. I give it to the one that gained 5. See, when you get into the kingdom, it's those who wanted to be there, to want to obey God and be like that, right? So it's just a portraying, you know, a portrait of what to do then. So in the Torah portion in Judges, the people are back in bondage again because of their disobedience, and God raises up more who are willing to put their life on the line for what they love the Most High, and His and their people, Deborah and Barak. Barak is of the tribe of Naphtali, when you read. The tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun. Let me tell you something. When I got into these Torah portions, this has helped me so much understanding the Bible more and more clear. You know, I read the story of, you know, Jacob and you know, his children all the way to Joseph and Benjamin. But when we got into these Torah portions and started learning all the tribes of Israel. And then after you learn all the tribes of Israel and you get into the next parts of your Bible and you're reading through it, they're almost in every part of your Bible, all these tribes. Like, those are really important to really learn this as you're reading. When you get to the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun, if you know who the tribes are and where they came from, it rings a bell. But if you never read it and learned who or what it's about, when you get there, it's like, okay, Zebulun, Naphtali, Zebulun, okay, all right. You don't get a clear picture. The puzzle pieces don't fit. So prior to the Torah portions, we learned all the tribes, the sons that came from Jacob. Once you know the tribes, they stick out through the whole Bible. The purpose and plan of God becomes clear with every story. We're going to look at Judges chapter 4 for a moment. Starting with verse 6. And she sent and she summoned Barak, the son of Abinadab, from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, has not Elohim, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men from the people of, see, Naphtali and the people of Zebulun? So those are some of the tribes of Jacob, tribes of Israel. And you go to verse 9. I don't spend too much time here because we went through all this already in the Torah portion. verse 9, and she said, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for Yahweh will sell Sisera, see Sisera, into the hand of the woman. So she already spoke what God just told her by the Spirit. Hey, this is what's going to happen. Barak's not going to kill Sisera. A woman is, right? And did it or did it not happen? Didn't Jael do that? She's the one that put the tent peg through his head, through his skull. So when you read the story, you see all the things that happen, all the winning that they did. They won, they go up there, and all that happens. And then there's a song that's sung by Deborah and Barak. And in this song, she gives thanks and honor to the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun. Now, the first time I read this, pastors always taught us. He says, when you read, he said, you need to take your time and read it slowly and read it carefully. Because we used to, when we read something, we just want to just kind of read through it and get, you know, we're just used to that sometimes, just getting through something really quick. And then most of the time, we only retain about 15% of what we read anyway. You go back and you read it over and over again. The first time I read this, I caught that Naphtali and Zebulun, they're the ones that went forward. They went and put their lives on the line, right? They went out there for God and His people. They loved the people. They won't put their lives out there on the line. I'm thinking, okay, Naphtali and Zebulun. But when you go look in her song, she mentions others that put their lives on the line, but then she also mentions those who are basically cowards. She said, where were you? Why are you sitting over there with your ships? And why are you sitting over there with your sheep? And I'm going to read that a little bit in the song. I'm going to kind of point those things out. So she makes melody to the Lord. She sings a song. And in verse 9, she says, my heart goes out to the commanders of Israel who offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless Yahweh. She sings about herself and about Barak. And then verse 14, from Ephraim, their root, they marched down into the valley following you, Benjamin, with your kinsmen. Benjamin, that's a tribe. Benjamin, with your kinsmen, from Makor marched down the commanders. And from Zebulun, those who bear the lieutenant's staff, the princes of Issachar came with Deborah, and Issachar, faithful to Barak, into the valley, they rushed at his heels among the clans of Reuben. There were great searchings of heart. See that? Great searchings of heart. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds? What tribe is she talking about again? The clans of Reuben. Why did you sit still among the sheepfolds? To hear the whistling of the flocks? Among the clans of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. It wasn't just about Naphtali and Zebulun. They all got their heart searched, right? Are you going to step out on the line? Are you going to put your life at risk? Esther put her life at risk, didn't she? Yeshua, our Mashiach, our Messiah, Jesus, He put His life on the line for us, right? Gilead stayed beyond the Jordan. And Dan, why did he stay with the ships? Why you stayed over there? Why didn't you put your life on the line with us? Asher sat still at the coast of the sea, staying by his landings. Zebulun is a people who risked their lives to the death. Naphtali too, on the heights of the field. The kings came, they fought. Then fought the kings of Canaan at Tanakh by the waters of Megiddo. They got no spoils of silver. They didn't care about the spoils. They don't care about the people and what God commanded them to do. Put your lives on the line. Go on out there. Trust me. You're going to win this battle today. Go, Deborah. Deborah says, go, Barak. Barak says, go. I'm not going by myself. You're going to go with me. I'll go. Let's all go. Naphtali, Zebulun, Dan, Benjamin, And then she sings a song in the end. Why didn't y'all go? Why y'all want to just be spectators? Why can't you get out there and do it too, right? She even talks about Jael. Verse 24, most blessed of women be Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite, of tent-dwelling women, most blessed. He asked for water and she gave him milk. She brought him curds in a noble's bowl. She sent her hand to the tent peg and her right hand to the workman's mallet. I believe that had to be a frightful moment for her for a second, right? She's got that tent peg in her hand. This dude's sleeping. She don't know what he's got. She's putting her life on the line. Anything can happen any moment. But she just does what she's told to do. I got to kill this guy. And so she does it. She put her life on the line, right? So thanks and honor to the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun, even Issachar, even Barak, even Jael, the wife of Kenite. In her song, she asked a question to the cowards, and we talked about that. And what about us? God's message is clear to us through our brothers and sisters who put their lives on the line for God and His people. You know, when we look at these people that are Jews, and we look at Yeshua HaMashiach, He's the King of the Jews. And when we get born again, actually we're not born again yet because we haven't died and been born again and raised from the dead yet until we finish our flight all the way to the end. But until we're there, our speaking and our telling to everybody of us of being born again and what we say and we do is being grafted into the olive tree of being grafted in Jews. So these people that put their lives on the line for their people, we being grafted in, that's our people. So, you know, we had a Super Bowl that we celebrated and screamed to the top of our lungs for entertainment. Shouldn't we scream to the top of our lungs that God put somebody in a place to save our people? Right? That's our people. That's our people, Jews. And so we're grafted in. We're Jews, and so we celebrate. We should gather in and bring the foods for Purim. This has been kind of cloudy for me last year because I've never seen or heard of this before. You know, it was all told these other stories and raised up in church. But now we'll go back and find out the truth, and I'm like, wow, this is incredible. This is what we should be celebrating. This is our people. This is the ones that were going to die on a certain day in a certain time. And God's love for His people put somebody up in a luxury seat. And even if she would have denied it and went another way, He said, I'll put somebody in her place anyway and still save the people. Right? So we could say, hey, I'm kind of shy or embarrassed. I don't feel like it. And that's fine. God will put you on the side and put somebody else in your place. He's going to get done what He wants to do. He'll get it done. So all our lives we can come to church and be a spectator. You know, God knows the hearts in the end, right? It's what the heart's going to be like in the end. So God's message is clear to us through our brothers and our sisters. I call these people my brothers and sisters here. They're dead now. But they're going to be raised from the dead one day. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. No matter how many years it's been, it's like as if they're sleeping the whole time. They know nothing. But in the end, they'll be raised from the dead. All those are my brothers and sisters who died putting their lives on the line for God and His people. And God and His people and His family and His kingdom, which is the reward. The self-seekers choosing the luxuries and the cowards, that's all they got. That's all you get. It crumbles with you. What you love the most is what you're going to get. The money, the luxuries, the self-satisfaction turns to dust with you, right? God and His people are forever. God and His people and His kingdom is forever. So the works that you're doing it unto the Lord over there in Baton Rouge, that counts, right? All that counts. Every little dot, every little tittle, everything that you're doing unto the Lord, it counts. I want to recognize Sister Dawn also being a great example to me, using the abilities that she has to obey the Father. And that's what he's looking for, is obedience with the abilities that we have, rather than self-satisfaction for what we want. It's for his plan to bring him glory and honor. So I honor you, Sister Dawn, for bringing God glory and honor with your abilities that you have. And all of you and everybody here. Everybody has a plan. God has a plan for you in your life. Okay? So that's what all the poem and all the Torah portions and everything's all about. Right? Bringing God the glory and his kingdom, and not self-satisfaction. Brother Josh? Good? You want to end and for some more service?